That was when he approached the station manned by a tall Gubru. It did not help that the avian wore the colors of the Uplift Institute and was supposedly sworn to impartiality. Piven had seen too many of that clan wearing Institute livery today to satisfy him. The bird-like creature used a vodor and asked him a simple question of protocol, then let him proceed. A thought suddenly occurred to Piven as he quickly left that test site. What if the suzerain of propriety had been completely defeated by its peers? Whatever its real agenda, that suzerain had at least been sincere about wanting to run a real ceremony. A promise made had to be kept. But what of the others? The admiral and the bureaucrat? Certainly they would have different priorities. Could the whole thing be rigged so that neo-chimps could not win, no matter how ready they were for advancement? Was that possible? Could such a result be of real benefit to the Gubru in some way? Filled with such troubling thoughts, Piven barely passed a test that involved juggling several complex motor functions while having to solve an intricate three-dimensional puzzle. As he left that station, with the waters of Aspinall Bay falling under late afternoon shadows to his left, he almost failed to notice a new commotion far below. At the last moment, he turned to see where a growing sound was coming from.
"What in Ifni's incontinence?"
He blinked and stared. He was not alone in that. By now half of the galactic dignitaries seemed to be drifting down that way, attracted by a brown tide that was just then spilling up to the foot of the ceremonial mound. Piven tried to see what was happening, but patches of sunlight, reflected by still bright water, made it hard to make out anything in the shadows just below. What he could tell was that the bay appeared to be covered with boats, and many were now emptying their passengers onto the isolated beach where he had landed hours before. So more of the city chims had come out to get a better look, after all. He hoped none of them misbehaved, but he doubted any harm would be done. The Galactics surely knew that monkey curiosity was a basic chimp trait, and this was only acting true to form. Probably the chims would be given a lower portion of the slope from which to watch, as was their right by galactic law. He couldn't afford to waste any more time dawdling, though. Piven turned to hurry onward, and although he passed the next test on galactic history, he also knew that his score had not helped his cumulative total much. Now he was glad when he arrived on the westward slope. As the sun sank lower, this was the side on which the wind did not bite quite as fiercely. Piven shivered as he plodded on, slowly gaining on the diminishing crowd above him.
"Slow down, Galet," he muttered. "Can't you drag your feet or something? You don't have to answer every damn question the very second it's asked. Can't you tell I'm coming?"
A dismal part of him wondered if she already knew, and maybe didn't care. Chapter 88 Galet. She found it increasingly hard to feel that it mattered, and the cause of her depression was more than just the fatigue of a long, hard day, or the burden of all these bewildered chims relying upon her to lead them ever onward and upward through a maze of ever more demanding trials. Nor was it the constant presence of the tall Chen named Iron Grip. It certainly was frustrating to see him breeze through tests that other better chims failed. And as the other sponsor's choice, he was usually right behind her, wearing an infuriating, smug grin. Still, Galet could grit her teeth and ignore him, most of the time. Nor even did the examinations themselves bother her much. Hell, they were the best part of the day. Who was the ancient human sage who had said that the purest pleasure and the greatest force in the ascent of mankind had been the skilled worker's joy in her craft? While Galet was concentrating, she could block out nearly everything. The world, the five galaxies, all but the challenge to show her skill. Underneath all the crises and murky questions of honor and duty, there was always a clean sense of satisfaction whenever she finished a task and knew she had done well even before the Institute examiners told her so. No, the tests weren't what disturbed her. What bothered Galet most was the growing suspicion that she had made the wrong choice after all. "I should have refused to participate," she thought. "I should have simply said no." Oh, the logic was the same as before. By protocol and all of the rules, the Gubru had put her in a position where she simply had no choice for her own good and the good of her race and clan. And yet she also knew she was being used. It made her feel defiled. During that last week of study at the library, she had found herself repeatedly dozing off under the screens, bright with arcane data. Her dreams were always disturbed, featuring birds holding threatening instruments. Images of Max and Fibbon and so many others lingered, thickening her thoughts every time she jerked awake again. Then the day arrived. She had donned her robe almost with a sense of relief that now, at least, it was all finally approaching an end. But what end? A slight chimney emerged from the most recent test booth, mopped her forehead with the sleeve of her silvery tunic, and walked tiredly over to join Galet. Michaela Noddings was only an elementary school teacher and a green card, but she had proven more adaptable and enduring than quite a few blues who were now walking the lonely spiral back down again. Galet felt deep relief on seeing her new friend still among the candidates. She reached out to take the other chimney's hand.
"I almost flunked that one, Galet," Michaela said. Her fingers trembled in Galet's grasp. "Now don't you dare flake out on me, Michaela," Galet said soothingly. She brushed her companion's sweaty locks. "You're my strength. I couldn't go on if you weren't here."
In Michaela's brown eyes was a soft gratitude, mixed with irony.
"You're a liar, Galet. That's sweet of you to say, but you don't need any of us, let alone little me. Whatever I can pass, you take it a breeze."
Of course, that wasn't strictly true. Galet had figured out that the examinations offered by the Uplift Institute were scaled somehow in order to measure not only how intelligent the subject was, but also how hard he or she was trying. Sure, Galet had advantages over most of the other chims, in training and perhaps in IQ, but at each stage her own trials got harder too. Another chim, a probationer known as Weasel, emerged from the booth and sauntered over to where Iron Grip waited with the third member of their band. Weasel did not seem to be much put out. In fact, all three of the surviving probationers looked relaxed, confident. Iron Grip noticed Galet's glance and winked at her. She turned away quickly. One last chim came out then and shook his head. "That's it," he said.
"Then, Professor Simmons?"
When he shrugged, Galet sighed. This just did not make sense. Something was wrong when fine, erudite chims were failing, and yet the tests did not cull out Iron Grip's bunch from the very start. Of course, the Uplift Institute might judge advancement differently than the human-led Earth Clan did. Iron Grip and Weasel and Steel Bar were intelligent, after all. The Galactics might not view the probationers' various character flaws as all that terrible, loathsome as they were to Terrans. But no, that wasn't the reason at all, Galet realized, As she and Michaela stepped past the remaining 20 or so to lead the way upward again. Galet knew that something else had to be behind this. The Probys were just too cocky. Somehow they knew that a fix was in. It was shocking. The Galactic Institutes were supposed to be above reproach, but there it was. She wondered what, if anything, could be done about it. As they approached the next station, this one manned by a plump, leathery, sorrow inspector and 6 robots, Galet looked around and noticed something for the first time. That nearly all of the brightly dressed galactic observers, the aliens unaffiliated with the Institute who had come to watch and engage in informal diplomacy, nearly all of them had drifted away. A few could still be seen, moving swiftly downslope and to the east, as if drawn by something interesting happening off that way. "Of course they won't bother telling us what's going on," she thought bitterly. "Okay, Galet," Michaela sighed. "You first again. Show 'em we can talk real good." So even a prim schoolteacher will use grunt dialect as an affectation, a bond. Galet sighed.
"Yeah. Me go do that thing."
Iron Grip grinned at her, but Galet ignored him as she stepped up to bow to the sorrow and submit to the attentions of the robots. Chapter 89 Galactics. The suzerain of Beam and Talon strutted back and forth under the flapping fabric of the Uplift Institute Pavilion. The Gubru Admiral's voice throbbed with a vibrato of outrage.
"Intolerable! Unbelievable! Impermissible! This invasion must be stopped, held back, put into abeyance!"
The smooth routine of a normal uplift ceremony had been shattered. Officials and examiners of the Institute, galactics of many shapes and sizes, now rushed about under the great canopy, hurriedly consulting portable libraries, seeking precedence for an event none of them had ever witnessed or imagined before. An unexpected disturbance had triggered chaos everywhere, and especially in the corner where the suzerain danced its outrage before a spider-like being. The Grand Examiner, an arachnoid Serentini, stood relaxed in a circle of data tanks, listening attentively to the Gubru officer's complaint.
"Let it be ruled a violation, an infraction, a capital offense. My soldier shall enforce propriety severely."
The suzerain fluffed its down to display the pinkish tint already visible under the outer feathers, as if the Serentini would be impressed to see that the admiral was nearly female, almost a queen. But the sight failed to impress the Grand Examiner. Serentini were all female, after all. So what was the big deal? The Grand Examiner kept her amusement hidden, however.
"The new arrivals fit all of the criteria for being allowed to participate in this ceremony," she replied patiently in Galactic 3. "They have caused consternation, of course, and will be much discussed long after this day is done. Still, they are only one of many features of the ceremony which are, well, unconventional."
The Gubru's beak opened, then shut.
"What do you mean by that?"
"I mean that this is the most irregular uplift ceremony in mega-years. I have several times considered canceling it altogether."
"You dare not. We should appeal, seek redress, seek compensation."
"Oh, you would love that, wouldn't you?"
The Grand Examiner sighed.
"Everyone knows the Gubru are overextended now, but a judgment against one of the Institutes could cover some of your costs, no?"
This time the Gubru was silent. The Grand Examiner used two feelers to scratch a crease in her carapace.
"Several of my associates believe that that was your plan all along. There are so many irregularities in this ceremony you've arranged. But on close examination, each one seems to stop just short of illegality. You have been clever at finding precedents and loopholes. For instance, there is the matter of human approval of a ceremony for their own clients. It is unclear these hostage officials of yours understood what they were agreeing to when they signed the documents you showed me."
"They were, had been, offered library access."
"A skill for which wolflings are not renowned. There is suspicion of coercion."
"We have a message of acceptance from Earth, from their homeworld, from their nest mothers."
"Aye," the Sarantini agreed. "They accepted your offer of peace and a free ceremony. What poor wolfling race in their dire circumstances could turn down such a proposal? But semantic analysis shows that they thought they were only agreeing to discuss the matter further. They obviously did not understand that you had purchased liberation of their old applications. Some made more than 50 paktars ago. This allowed the waiting period to be waived."
"Their misunderstandings are not our concern,"
clipped the suzerain of Beam and Talon.
"Indeed. And does the suzerain of Propriety hold with this view?"
This time there was only silence. Finally, the Grand Examiner lifted both forelegs and crossed them in a formal bow.
"Your protest is acknowledged. The ceremony shall continue under the ancient rules set down by the progenitors."
The Gubru commander had no choice. It bowed in return. Then it swiveled and flounced outside, angrily pushing aside a crowd of its guards and aides, leaving them cackling, disturbed in its wake. The examiner turned to a robot assistant.
"What were we discussing before the suzerain arrived?"
"An approaching craft whose occupants claim diplomatic protection and observer status,"
the thing replied in Galactic One.
"Ah, yes, those."
"They are growing quite perturbed, as Gubru interceptors now seem about to cut them off and may do them harm."
The examiner hesitated only a moment.
"Please inform the approaching envoys that we will be only too happy to grant their request. They should come directly to the mount, under the protection of the Uplift Institute."
The robot hurried off to pass on the order. Other aides then approached, waving readouts and picting preliminary reports on still more anomalies. One after another of the hollow screens lit up to show the crowd that had arrived at the base of the hill, tumbling out of rusty boats and surging up the unguarded slopes.
"This event grows ever more interesting,"
the Grand Examiner sighed reflectively.
"I wonder what will happen next."
Chapter 90 Galet. It was after sunset, and Gimel High had already sunk below a western horizon, turbid with dark clouds. By the time the worn-down survivors finally passed through the last examination screen, to collapse in exhaustion upon a grassy knoll. 6 Chens and 6 Chimmies lay quietly close to each other for warmth. They were too tired to engage in the grooming all felt they needed.
"Mama, why didn't they choose dogs to uplift instead? Or pigs?"
one of them moaned.
"Baboons," another voice suggested.
and there was a murmur of agreement. Such creatures deserve this kind of treatment.
"Anybody but us,"
a third voice summarized succinctly.
"Ex-exaltawit humilis,"
Galet thought silently.
"They have lifted up the humble of origins."
The motto of the Terrigan's Uplift Board had its origins in the Christian Bible. To Galet, it had always carried the unfortunate implication that someone, somewhere, was going to get crucified. Her eyes closed, and she felt a light sleep close in immediately.
"Just a catnap,"
she thought. But it did not last long. Galet felt a sudden return of that dream, the one in which a Gubru stood over her, peering down the barrel of a malevolent machine. She shivered and opened her eyes again. The last shreds of twilight were fading. Bitterly clear, the stars twinkled as if through something more refracting than mere atmosphere. She and the others stood up quickly as a brightly lit floater car approached and settled down in front of them. Out stepped three figures, a tall, downy white Gubru, a spider-like galactic, and a pudgy human Mel, whose official gown hung on him like a potato sack. As she and the other Chims bowed, Galet recognized Cordwainer Appleby, the head of Garth's local uplift board. The man looked bewildered. Certainly he must be overawed to be taking part in all this. Still, Galet also wondered whether Appleby was drugged.
"I want to congratulate you all," he said, stepping just ahead of the other two. "You should know how proud we are of all of you. I've been told that while there are certain test scores that are still in dispute, the overall judgment of the Uplift Institute is that Pan Argonostes, the Neo-Chimpanzees of Earth Clan, are, or, well, actually have been ready for Stage 3 for quite some time." The arachnoid official stepped forward then.
"That is true. In fact, I can promise that the Institute will favorably consider any future applications by Earth Clan for further examinations." "Thank you,"
Galet thought as she and the others bowed again.
"But please, don't bother picking me for the next one."
Now the Grand Examiner launched into a lengthy speech about the rights and duties of client races. She spoke of the long-departed progenitors who began galactic civilization so long ago, and the procedures they set down for all succeeding generations of intelligent life to follow. The Examiner used Galactic 7, which most of the Chims could at least follow. Galet tried to pay attention, but within her, troubled thoughts kept turning to what was certainly to come after this. She was sure she felt underfoot an increase in the faint trembling which had accompanied them all the way up the mountain. It filled the air with a low, barely audible rumbling. Galet swayed as a wave of unreality seemed to pass through her. She looked up and saw that several of the evening stars appeared to flare, suddenly brighter. Others fled laterally as an oval distortion inserted itself directly overhead. A blackness began to gather there. The Examiner's Aeolian speech droned on. Cordwainer Appleby listened raptly, a bemused expression on his face, but the white-plumed Gubru grew visibly impatient with each passing moment. Galet could well understand why. Now that the hyperspace shunt was warmed up and ready, every passing minute was costing the invaders. When she realized this, Galet felt warmer toward the droning Serentini official. She nudged Michaela when her friend seemed about to doze off and put on an attentive expression.
Several times the Gubru opened its beak as if about to commit the ungraceful act of interrupting the examiner. Finally, when the spider-like being stopped briefly for a breath, the avian cut in sharply. Galet, who had been studying hard for months, easily understood the clipped words in Galactic 3.
"Delaying, dawdling, stalling. Your motives are in doubt, incredible, suspect. I insist that you proceed, move along, get on with it."
But the examiner scarcely missed a beat, continuing in Galactic 7.
"In passing the formidable gauntlet you face today, more rigorous than any testing I have heretofore witnessed, you have demonstrated your worthiness as junior citizens of our civilization, and bring credit to your clan. What you receive today, you have earned, the right to reaffirm your love of your patrons and to choose a stage consort. The latter decision is an important one. As consort, you must select a known, oxygen-breathing, star-faring race, one that is not a member of your own clan. This race will defend your interests and impartially intercede in disputes between you and your patrons. If you wish, you may select the Timbrimi of the clan of the Crowneth, who have been your consort advisors up until now. Or you may make a change. Or you may choose yet another option to end your participation in galactic civilization and ask that the meddling of Uplift be reversed. Even this drastic step was prescribed by the progenitors as insurance of the fundamental rights of living things."
"Could we? Could we really do that?"
Galet felt numb at the very idea, even though she knew it was almost never allowed in practice. The option was there. She shuddered and refocused her attention as the Grand Examiner lifted two arms in a benediction.
"In the name of the Institute of Uplift, and before all of galactic civilization, I therefore pronounce you, the representatives of your race, qualified and capable of choosing and bearing witness, go forth and do all living things proud."
The Serentini stepped back, and at last it was the turn of the ceremony sponsor. Normally this would have been a human, or perhaps a Timbrimi, but not this time. The Gubru emissary did a little dance of impatience. Quickly it barked into a Vodor, and words in Galactic 7 boomed forth.
"10 of you shall accompany the final representatives to the shunt and offer witness. The selected pair shall carry the burden of choice and honor. These two I shall name now. Dr. Galet Jones, female, citizen of Garth, Terrigan's Federation, Clan of Earth."
Galet did not want to move, but Michaela, her friend, betrayed her by planting a hand in the small of her back and gently urging her forward. She stepped a few paces toward the dignitaries and bowed. The Vodor boomed again.
"Iron Grip Hansen, male, citizen of Garth, Terrigan's Federation, Clan of Earth."
Most of the chims behind her gasped in shock and dismay. But Galet only closed her eyes as her worst fears were confirmed. Up until now she had clung to a hope that the suzerain of propriety might still be a force among the Gubru, that it might yet compel the triumvirate to play fair. But now she felt him step up next to her, and knew the Chen she hated most was wearing that grin.
"Enough. I've stood for this long enough. Surely the Grand Examiner suspects something. If I tell her..."
But she did not move. Her mouth did not open to speak. Suddenly, and with brutal clarity, Galet realized the real reason why she had gone along with this farce for so long.
They fooled with my mind.
It all made sense. She recalled the dreams, nightmares of helplessness under the subtle, adamant coercion of machines held in ruthless talons.
The Uplift Institute wouldn't be equipped to test for that.
Of course they wouldn't. Uplift ceremonies were invariably joyous occasions, celebrated by patron and client alike. Whoever heard of a race representative having to be conditioned or forced to participate?
It must have been done after Fibbon was taken away. The suzerain of propriety couldn't have agreed to such a thing. If the Grand Examiner only knew, we could squeeze a planet's worth of reparation guild from the Gubru.
Galit opened her mouth. She tried to make words come. The Grand Examiner looked at her. Perspiration condensed on Galit's brow. All she had to do was make the accusation, even hint at it. But her brain was frozen. It felt as if she had forgotten how to make words. Speech lock. Of course, the Gubru had learned how easy it was to impose on a neo-chimpanzee. A human, perhaps, might have been able to break the hold, but Galit recognized how futile it was in her case. She could not read arthropoid expressions, but it seemed somehow as if the Serentini looked disappointed. The examiner stepped back.
"Proceed to the hyperspace shunt," she said.
"No!" Galit wanted to cry, but all that escaped was a faint sigh as she felt her right hand lift of its own accord and meet Iron Grip's left. He held on, and she could not let go. That was when she felt an image begin to form in her mind, an avian face with a yellow beak, and cold, unblinking eyes. No effort could rid her of the picture. Galit knew with terrible certainty that she was about to carry that image with her to the top of the ceremonial mound, and once there, she and Iron Grip would send it upward into the oval of warped space overhead for all to see, here and on a thousand other worlds. The part of her mind that still belonged to her, the logical entity, now cut off and isolated, saw the cold, covenous logic of the plan. Oh, humans were sure to claim that the choice made today had been rigged, and probably more than half of the clans in the five galaxies would believe it. But that wouldn't change anything. The choice would still stand. The alternative would be to discredit the entire system. Stellar civilization was under such pressure right now that it could not stand much further strain. In fact, quite a few clans might decide that there had already been quite enough trouble over one little tribe of wolflings. Whatever the rights and wrongs, there would be substantial sentiment for ending the problem once and for all. It came to Galit all in a rush. The Gubru did not merely want to become Chim's new stage consort protectors. They meant to bring about the extinction of humanity. Once that was accomplished, her own people would be up for adoption, and she had little doubt how that would go. Galit's heart pounded. She struggled not to turn in the direction Iron Grip was guiding her, but to no avail. She prayed that she would have a stroke.
"Let me die."
Her life hardly mattered. They certainly planned to have her disappear immediately after the ceremony anyway, to dispose of the evidence.
"Oh, good all and Ifni, strike me down now."
She wanted to scream. At that moment, words came. The words. But it was not her voice that spoke them.
"Stop! An injustice is being done, and I demand a hearing."
Galit had not thought her heart could beat any quicker, but now tachycardia made her feel faint.
"Oh God, let it be."
She heard Iron Grip curse and let go of her hand. That alone brought her joy.
There was the sound of squawking, Gubru anger, and high eeps of Chim's surprise. Someone, Michaela, she realized, took her arm and turned her around. It was full night now. Scattered clouds were underlit by the bright beacons of the mound and by the turbulent, lambent tunnel of energy now taking form above the artificial mountain. Into the stark light of the floater car's headlamps, a solitary neo-chimpanzee in a dust-coated formal robe approached from the last test station. He wiped sweat from his brow and strode purposefully toward the three surprised officials.
Fibbin,
Galet thought. Dazed, she found that old habits were the first to reassert themselves.
Oh, Fibbin, don't swagger. Try to remember your protocol.
When she realized what she was doing, Galet suddenly giggled in a brief wave of hysteria. It shook her partially free of her immobility, and she managed to lift her hand to cover her mouth.
Oh, Fibbin,
she sighed. Iron Grip growled, but the new arrival only ignored the probationer. Fibbin caught her eye and winked. It struck Galet how the gesture that had once so infuriated her now made her knees feel weak with joy. He stepped before the three officials and bowed low. Then, with hands clasped respectfully, Fibbin awaited permission to speak.
"Dishonorable, incorrigible, impermissible interruptions,"
the Gubru's Vodor boomed.
"We demand immediate removal and sanction, punishment."
The noise suddenly cut off as the Grand Examiner used one of her forward arms to reach up and switch the Vodor off. She stepped daintily forward and addressed Fibbin.
"Young one, I congratulate you on making your way up to this place all alone. Your ascent provided much of the excitement and unconventionality that is making this one of the most memorable of all ceremonies on record. By virtue of your test scores and other accomplishments, you have earned a place on this pinnacle."
The Serentini crossed two arms and lowered her forebody.
"Now,"
she said as she rose again,
"can we assume that you have a complaint to voice? One important enough to explain such abruptness of tone?"
Galet tensed. The Grand Examiner might be sympathetic, but there was a veiled threat implied in those words. Fibbin had better make this good. One mistake, and he could make matters even worse than before. Fibbin bowed again.
I respectfully request an explanation of how the race representatives were chosen."
"Not too bad."
Still, Galet struggled against her conditioning. If only she could step forward and help. For some time, the dim slopes beyond the circle of lights had begun to fill with the galactic dignitaries, those who had departed earlier to watch unknown events downslope. Now they were all hushed, watching a humble client from one of the newest of all species demand answers from a lord of the Institute. The Grand Examiner's voice was patient when she answered.
"It is traditional for the ceremony sponsors to select a pair from among those who pass all trials. While it is true that the sponsors are, on this occasion, declared enemies of your clan, their enmity will officially end upon completion of the rites. Peace will exist between the clan of Terrans and that of Guxiu Gubru. Do you object to this, young one?"
"No," Fibbin shook his head. "Not to that. I just want to know this. Do we absolutely have to accept the sponsor's choice as our representatives?"
The Gubru emissary immediately squawked indignantly. The Chims looked at one another in surprise. Iron Grip muttered,
"When this is over, I'm going to take that little frat boy and..."
The examiner waved for silence. Its many faceted eyes focused upon Fibbon.
"Young one, what would you do were it up to you? Would you have us put it to a vote of your peers?"
Fibbon bowed.
"I would, Your Honor."
This time the Gubru's shriek was positively painful to the ear. Galet tried once again to step forward, but Iron Grip held her arm tightly. She was forced to stand there, listening to the probationer's muttered curses. The Sarantini official spoke at last.
"Although I am sympathetic, I cannot see how I can allow your request. Without precedent..."
"But there is precedent."
It was a new, deep voice coming from the dim slope behind the officials. From the crowd of galactic visitors, four figures now emerged into the light. And if Galet had felt surprise before, now she could only stare in disbelief.
"Utha Calving!"
The slender Timbrimi was accompanied by a bearded human Mel, whose ill-fitting formal robe had probably been borrowed from some bipedal, but not quite humanoid, galactic, and was thrown over what seemed to be animal skins. Beside the young man walked a neo-chimp, who had obvious trouble standing completely erect, and who bore many of the stigmata of atavism. The chim hung back when they approached the clearing, as if he knew he did not belong on this ground. It was the fourth being, a towering figure whose bright, inflated crest ballooned upward in dignity, who bowed casually and addressed the Grand Examiner.
"I see you, Koff Quinn III of the Uplift Institute."
The Sarantini bowed back.
"I see you, honored Ambassador Kalt of the Thenanin. And you, Utha Calving of the Timbrimi, and your companions. It is pleasant to witness your safe arrival."
The big Thenanin spread his arms apart.
"I thank Your Honor for allowing me to use your transmitting facilities to contact my clan, after so long an enforced isolation."
"This is neutral ground,"
the Uplift official said.
"I also know that there are serious matters regarding this planet which you wish to press with the Institute once this ceremony is at an end. But for now, I must insist we maintain pertinence. Will you please explain the remark you made on your arrival?"
Kalt gestured toward Utha Calving.
"This respected envoy represents the race which has served as stage consort and protector to the neo-chimpanzees ever since their wolfling patrons encountered Galactic Society. I shall let him tell you."